pH balance is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 9 or higher. Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals and elements. This product is a one-of-a-kind in its strength and effectiveness. Using Plasma pH Drops is one of the best ways to make your water alkaline while helping you get rid of acid and regaining your health and energy. With just 10 drops, you can raise the pH level of the water you drink up to the pH of 10. Alkalizing water helps the body rid itself of acidic waste and increases the oxygen content of your body. Disease organisms like bacteria and cancer cannot survive in an alkaline environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's A-L-K-A-Vision.com. Or call 269-344-3420 today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest is Professor William Grigg. We're talking about what's going on over in Georgia. So you pick the story up there, William.
I was talking about the fact that whenever a war of this sort is orchestrated, and I use that word in a specific sense, the first people who are going to be shoved out into the conflict are those who are considered the most disposable. And so obviously here what we have is a situation where there has been this cultivated relationship between Washington and Georgia over the course of more than a decade, where Washington has cynically provided assurances to Georgia that it will treat Georgia like an ally. Now, those who actually know the history, the unvarnished history of recent decades in terms of Washington's relationship with its allies, would know that any time Washington offers to be your ally, you should do everything you can to avoid the embrace of Washington. It was Henry Kissinger who said, almost by way of confession, that it may be dangerous to be an enemy of the United States, but it's deadly to be the friend of the United States. And of course, Kissinger did what he could to validate that axiom as far as foreign policy is concerned.
I think it was actually the Shah of Iran's sister who said, if you have the United States as an ally, you certainly don't need any enemies. So I think that's really...
Unfortunately, that's true.
And it really is.
And the thing is that Georgia is a country that has suffered for a long, long time, for decades, almost a century, of course, as have most of the other former constituent elements of the Soviet Union. And beginning in 1991, with the putative collapse of the Soviet Union, you saw this effort on the part of Washington to bring Georgia, along with a number of other former Soviet SSRs, into the orbit of Washington, D.C. And it's been picking up, Washington has, by way of a NATO alliance that, of course, has outlived its advertised purpose. It's been picking up a lot of the former Warsaw Pact countries, and informal assurances had been made to Moscow by Washington that the SSRs, the former Soviet Socialist Republics, would not be brought into NATO. But you see, NATO now expanding to include the former Baltic nations, who really should be left alone and be left independent. They'd be far better off if they were completely free of any of these entanglements, as any country would be. And there's a subordinate sort of front porch quasi-membership status for a number of countries, Georgia among them, through the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe, which is called the GUUAM, or Guam Alliance. That's Georgia, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and Moldova. They're not members of NATO. They're not really members of any firm and standing security alliance or multilateral organization, but through a 1996 document called the Lisbon Declaration, which was promulgated in connection with this Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe, these nations were brought into an informal alliance with Washington and with NATO. And it's through the aegis of this informal quasi-membership status that you now have these relief efforts going on, where Washington is getting us entangled in this war between Georgia and Moscow that was really brought about and precipitated by Washington's actions beginning in April of this year, when Mr. Bush announced that it was the intention of Washington to bring Georgia into the NATO alliance. And up until a week before the conflict began, with Georgia's attack on South Ossetia, which is a breakaway province of Georgia that is predominantly ethnic Russian in terms of its demography. Up to a week before Georgia's aggressive action here, you had American advisors on the ground in Georgia training the Georgian military with the help of some freelancers and mercenaries from Israel for the purpose of putting together the type of offensive action that we saw that precipitated Moscow's retaliatory strike. And, of course, Russia being much bigger and much stronger and having a larger and better-equipped military than Georgia, you're dealing here with a rout that should have been anticipated by everybody. But I think you're probably right in talking about the fact that Georgia was really set up here. Saakashvili, the American-educated and English-speaking neocon who was installed as the president of Georgia in 2003 in the so-called Rose Revolution, which was primarily funded by Washington, probably believed the assurances he was given that Washington would treat Georgia as a security interest and as an ally and come to the rescue of Georgia if it got in over its head, which it very quickly did. And, of course, if John McCain had his way, his top advisor, of course, is somebody who is on the payroll of the Georgian government. He's somebody who is a paid shill of this foreign power. John McCain is trying to say that today all of us are Georgians and that there's some kind of intimate fraternal solidarity-type relationship that Americans should feel with the admittedly long-suffering inhabitants of that country. That, of course, is not the policy of the Bush administration. They wanted to precipitate a war for a number of reasons, the first of which, I think, is to keep Russia occupied in that part of the near abroad in the interests of making it easier to mount a military strike on Iran. Tehran being very close to Moscow, they have commercial and energy deals and technological transfer arrangements that are very important to both parties. If you tie up Russia with a mess on its front porch, it really can't come so readily to the aid of Tehran in the highly likely contingency that in the highly likely event that we have a strike by the United States and or Israel on Tehran, which I think is, as my language would suggest, all but inevitable here. And, of course, the instant you saw the Russian military deployed against Georgia, it's almost as if an invisible hand threw a switch, and suddenly, after being told for how many years that Russia was our friend and boon companion in this post-Cold War New World Order, we're being taken back to the days of Brezhnev and high Soviet imperialism and evangelistic outreach by military force and subversion in the name of what? Well, they don't say that we're going back to the era of Soviet Marxism. They don't say that Russia is now going to be crusading on behalf of Marx and Lenin, but they want to resurrect, I think, for the purpose of domestic consumption here, this image of Russia as a formidable strategic adversary. And that, of course, is something that is the photographic negative of what the Russian population is being fed, much more plausibly. Bear in mind, it's their country that's being ringed by these alliances that are manifestly hostile toward the interests of Russia. I mean, we wouldn't react very kindly if our immediate neighbors were part of a Russian-dominated multilateral security network and security alliance. And I don't think that the Russians are all that comfortable with the prospect of Washington building this network of alliances that circumscribe Russia's actions even in its own near abroad. I'm not saying that by way of saying that I sympathize necessarily with Russian policy. I'm saying that from a golden rule point of view, this isn't something I would enjoy as an American patriot. I'm sure Russian patriots, with whom I'm in contact by email and other means on more than a few occasions, don't like this either. They don't necessarily like their government any more than we like ours, but they like even less the prospect of finding themselves constricted and cocooned in this network that's being woven by Washington. And it's, at very least, extremely presumptuous on the part of Washington and complete violation of the advice of George Washington as to how we should manage our foreign affairs. So really they've revived a very useful model here in terms of controlling the perceptions of two populations that are key to this entire puzzle of building a world order. The first is, of course, the American population, and the second is the Russian population, the population of that part of Europe. And when you talk about world order, it's important to recognize that Mr. Saakashvili, the neocon puppet running Georgia, gave a speech just, I believe, a day or so ago, where he said that this war in Georgia is about building world order. He actually used the expression twice in that speech. And that, of course, is the giant framework here into which we have to place all these events. There is this ongoing effort to order the world according to the will of certain highly placed and very powerful people. They want the world to look a certain way, and they want a certain architecture to dominate the lives politically, economically, and otherwise of all the world's inhabitants. And you have to put this squarely in that framework.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand that both the leaders of Russia and the leaders of our country and the leaders of many of the other countries throughout the world who we have installed there, as our listeners know, we have our troop station in 130 nations throughout the world. Why would we have troops stationed in 130 nations? Because, of course, we're helping the ruthless, tyrannical dictators in many of those countries stay in power because they're willing to go along with our program for the New World Order, the New World Religion, and the enthronement of the New World Leader. That's what it's really all about. America has an empire, but, of course, it's building that empire to pursue a different goal, not an American goal. It has nothing to do with America's sovereignty. It has to do with the destruction of sovereignty of all nations throughout the world, and they are using our military and financial power to carry that out.
That's exactly what's happening here, and sometimes their objectives become very transparent, as when, for instance, the build-up to the war with Iraq in 2002-2003, we were constantly being bombarded, including from some apparently unlikely sources, such as some of the major talk radio personalities and Fox News, with messages to the effect that we simply cannot allow a government like that of Iraq to defy the will of the United Nations Security Council. And so, of course, the logic here, the conservative position's logic, because this is being presented to the public as conservatism, would dictate that it's a worthwhile objective to build up the power and prestige by enforcing the United Nations Security Council decrees, to build up the power and prestige of the United Nations at the cost of human lives, whether they're Iraqi or American, or the lives of anybody else we dragooned into the so-called Coalition of the Willing. And in the course of building this so-called Coalition of the Willing, you had a number of countries whose leaders were bought and bribed by the neocons in Washington, most prominent among them being, I think, the government of Georgia, which has the third largest contingent of troops on the ground in Iraq after those of the United States and Great Britain. You had a number of other countries who are now new members of NATO or who are members of some kind of para-NATO holding alliance, if you will, like this GUUAM alliance I talked about to which Georgia belonged, who also contributed troops and materiel to the occupation of Iraq. And this was something that was talked about before the first, the end of the first year. There was this talk about old Europe versus new Europe. Old Europe being Britain and France, France and Germany and Italy and Spain, people who were not particularly keen on the idea of invading and occupying Iraq. And new Europe consisted of all these former Soviet-dominated countries in the Warsaw Pact and in the former Soviet Union itself, who are now satellites of the United States and who are being bribed.
Hold that thought right there.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfall, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps, and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit it, you can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running, and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Hello, Ted Anderson. Listeners of the network are familiar with the Federal Reserve note and understand the risks of deficit spending. Therefore, with catastrophic events, it comes as no surprise that some banks have currently placed limits on the amount of cash depositors can remove from their accounts. A fractional reserve system means only a small portion of your deposit is held in reserve for immediate withdrawal. Deficit spending will skyrocket through FDIC if the government is forced to insure deposits during a bank run followed by a depressed economy. A current effort is underway by the Fed, along with other central banks, to increase liquidity for depositors. However, an increase in money supply without equal expansion in productivity can cause inflation. In order to achieve strength and stability, I recommend a conservative portion of all investments to be calmly repositioned into gold and silver. While paper investments currently have been driven by debt, gold on its own has held value for over 6,000 years. For more information, call 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is, of course, William Grigg. And William, why don't you just go ahead and pick up, because you've been talking about what's going on in Georgia, and certainly it looks like we've done everything we could to build up Georgia. Our military's been over there. We've been helping to supply them, along with the Israelis. And there's an Israeli contingent there of almost 1,000 people, a Marine contingent of 1,000 Americans. There was certainly about 1,000 other contractors and other people over there working for our government. And we're telling the Georgians, oh, you go ahead and stand up against those soldiers. Obvious, but as they do that, then what's going to happen? And right now, I'm sure you're well aware of the fact that we're flying the Georgian soldiers back from Iraq back to Georgia to engage in the battle. But what happens if one of our planes gets inadvertently shot down? What are the implications? Are we leaving ourselves wide open for increased involvement there? And what happens if, of course, the Russians didn't mean to shoot down our plane? Or maybe they didn't shoot it down. Maybe the CIA shot that plane down to justify expanding the war. There's so many things that could happen here.
Oh,
we're sitting on a powder keg right now, don't you
think?
There
are so many ways this could break in a way that would be unfavorable to the interests of everybody except for the power elite, and they are the masters at manipulating circumstances of this sort to their advantage, and they're completely immoral in the way that they do so. We've spoken on more than a few occasions about that hideous 1962 document called Operation Northwoods, which was an official Pentagon document that examined various potential ways of contriving terrorist attacks and other tragedies for the purpose of providing pretext for war against various countries. The specific target in that instance was Cuba, but there were various scenarios that also played out, for instance, in a very adapted and flexible fashion in such things as the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which led to the Vietnam War. And there are so many possibilities that butt off from the circumstances in Georgia right now. There's so many possible ways that we could find ourselves at a flashpoint in potential conflict with the only country on Earth that has a government capable of actually harming the United States, and that's the nuclear-armed country of post-Soviet Russia, They got that arsenal, as you tirelessly point out, in large measure through the programs that were put into place during World War II in order to arm them as our supposed ally against Nazi Germany, which had been brought to power, that regime, with the help of Wall Street, as Anthony Sutton pointed out in his book. But the thing that could happen, one of the likelier scenarios, would be that in the course of flying troops back from Georgia to fight the Russians, in other words, by intervening to provide the Georgian military with manpower to shoot Russian troops, you might end up in a circumstance where a commander on the ground decides that he would rather not allow the Georgian military to be reinforced in a way that would end up enhancing the power of the Georgian military to kill his men, and would authorize the shoot down of a transport plane. We've got humanitarian missions being flown. We have American military on the ground right now distributing humanitarian aid to an antagonist in this conflict. Those are two ways in which we've intervened on the side of the Georgians. And, of course, there's this report that was on, I believe, the BBC over the last couple of days. The video is available on the Internet, where an eyewitness claims to have seen American personnel who'd been killed wearing uniforms that contained American military insignia. I don't know if that's true. I certainly hope it isn't, for a number of reasons, beginning with the fact that I'd prefer not to see Americans get killed. But the thing that I find really unsettling here is that the purpose of diplomacy being to try to find some way of defusing a crisis in ways that are compatible with the interests of a given country, we're seeing Washington do exactly the opposite. They're doing whatever they can to exacerbate this crisis. And there are a number of people who are sober observers of the political scene who have suggested that this might be of a nature of an October surprise in August. You know, the classic October surprise is the idea of some dramatic development that will change the dynamic of a presidential race. And in this case, of course, the beneficiary would be John McCain, would be the Republican Party, because the Republican Party, despite its performance, is perceived as being stronger on matters of national security. And I don't think that it's at all coincidental that, as I mentioned before, one of the chief aides in John McCain's campaign is on the payroll of the government of Georgia, and he's been, that is to say, John McCain, has been hyper-militant in this instance in a way that suggests theatricality rather than sincerity. He's getting ready to dispatch two of his closest advisors, Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Joseph Lieberman, the nominally independent but actual Democrat senator from Connecticut, one of the most obnoxious, nauseating moralists in the Senate, somebody who seems to believe that everywhere he goes, he's cloaked in some kind of sanctity. And he's never met a war that he's not really enjoyed, in large measure, because he's never had to take a direct role in participating in a war. He's a hyper-militist, one of the most conspicuous neoconservative hawks. And he and his Lieberman and Lindsey Graham are headed for Georgia right now, and he's on the phone daily, apparently.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The pressures of everyday life can deliver a serious blow to your health. Stress increases blood pressure, potential heart problems, strokes, ulcers, depression, and insomnia. Stress suppresses your immune system and inhibits weight control. Stress makes you nervous, anxious, or irritable. Introducing Nature's Renewal Supreme Anti-Stress Formula. When you're stressed out or need to ease nervousness, our Supreme Anti-Stress Formula calms simple nervous tension and soothes irritability. This non-drowsy, all-natural formula improves mental clarity and focus. Focus, allowing you to function better and enjoy life at home, at work, or even at play. Call us today, 1-800-383-8474. That's 1-800-383-8474. Or visit us at pncdistributors.com. That's P, the letter N, C, distributors.com. Mention coupon code GCN and receive 20% off your order. Guaranteed to work or your money back. Nature's Renewal Supreme Anti-Stress Formula. Get back to feeling well and being well.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000 plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at BerkeyWater.com.
Attention. This is an extremely urgent, self-reliant news bulletin. If you have ever wanted to produce your own cheaper-than-dirt survival food, this is going to be the most important message you will ever hear. Here is why. This network has just learned of a new video course that reveals the secrets of how to safely prepare and store all types of survival foods in an event of social unrest and food shortages here in the U.S. Grain shortages and hunger are spreading across the globe. Will troops guard the food supplies in the U.S. this fall? Don't wait. Learn the food shortage skills that can keep you and your family alive in a crisis. Get the details at foodshortageusa.com. That's foodshortageusa.com. Or you can call toll-free 877-327-0365. Don't wait for empty shelves. Go to foodshortageusa.com while you still have time. www.foodshortageusa.com. Or toll-free at 877-327-0365. Act now.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is William Grigg. We're talking about what's going on over in Georgia and the implications as far as the United States is concerned, and of course the tragic implications as far as the people in that nation are concerned, and all the people who have already died unnecessarily because the United States encouraged Georgia to attack, you know, the breakaway province, knowing full well it would meet with military resistance from the Russians who are already stationed there. Well, before we go on, William, would you like to tell our listeners about your blog, how they can get there, what they'll find?
I appreciate that. My blog is called Pro Libertate, and I try to update it between 3 and 5 times a week with an essay that runs between 1,200 and 2,000 words. And as that length would suggest, this is not a typical blog, which is just, in most instances, a collection of paragraph-length or even shorter reflections on given subjects coupled with links to longer stories. I try to use the blog as a primary medium of doing investigative journalism of an opinion variety. I write editorial columns. I'm an opinion writer. But I try to back up what I say in the sense that the hypertext capacity of the Internet today makes documentation relatively easy. And so if you're interested in reading what I have to say at Pro Libertate, there are a couple of ways you can get there. The easiest and most obvious way is to Google the phrase Pro Libertate. That's Latin. It means for freedom, coupled with my last name, Grigg. If you type Pro Libertate and Grigg into Google, the first result should be my blog, Pro Libertate. The other way you can get there is by going to the homepage of the Welch Foundation, which is called The Right Source, and the URL for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. Once again, that's one word, www.rightsourceonline.com. And at the top of the page, the homepage, that is, of the Welch Foundation, there's a banner ad for my latest book, which is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can click through the banner ad at the top to order that book, or you can order it from Radio Liberty or from Amazon.com. And if you scroll down the screen, scroll down the front page there at The Right Source, and look at the left-hand side of the page, you'll find my photograph, and there's a link that will take you to the blog. Probably the easiest way to do it is to go to www.rightsourceonline.com and then scroll about a third of the way down the page, look at the left-hand side of the screen, and use the hyperlink to get there.
Okay, fine. Well, I certainly encourage people to do that, and certainly the book Liberty in Eclipse is a very important book, and whether you get it from us or elsewhere, fine, but be sure to read it. So go right ahead, William.
I do appreciate that. I was talking about the fact that some people who are observers of contemporary events and very capable and sober ones at that have concluded that what's going on in Georgia might be of the nature of an October surprise in August. And an October surprise, of course, is this late campaign development that changes the narrative of a presidential race. And with John McCain lagging behind Obama, but by no means, as far as most people would expect, he's within the margin of error in most polls, in most of the country, at least in terms of the popular vote. The idea is that there might be something that would dramatically change the texture of this race, and that a foreign crisis would redound to his benefit in that he is perceived as somebody who knows how to win wars. Although his contribution to warfare in a hands-on type of way historically has been to be shot down, bombing a light bulb factory over North Vietnam in a war that we lost, that he did that, that was his chief accomplishment after crashing the first three planes that he flew. But John McCain is perceived to be the stronger of the two candidates on foreign affairs, at least for the use of traditional hard power is concerned.
Let me just interrupt there. I was told by a man with very, very high connections, certainly that I don't have a lot of informants, but this gentleman who has spent most of his life in intelligence and certainly has connections at every level of government had suggested some time ago that there may well be a war with Iran before the election, very specifically to bring John McCain to power. Now, that was unsolicited, certainly it is quite logical. I would hate to think that there would be people so crass and indifferent to human suffering that would do something like that, but why should you and I be surprised when we've seen the history of this last 100 years?
Well, that takes us back to the Northwoods document, and most of the scenarios described in the Northwoods document envisioned the staging of terrorist attacks or some other kind of controlled crisis that would involve the loss of human life and almost always involve the loss of American lives. And when you talk about people being crass and pathologically indifferent to human suffering and the loss of human lives, including the lives of Americans for whom they're supposedly responsible, that fits, I think, to a T, the people we're describing here. I think that description more or less syncs up very well with the behavior that the people we're talking about. Whether we'll actually end up with a war before the election in Iran that would be to the best benefit of John McCain, McCain's campaign is benefiting tremendously from the crisis in Georgia. And my suspicion is the crisis in Georgia is a backfire, if you will, strategically, that it's been arranged, among other reasons, so as to tie up and occupy Russia so that in the event, the very likely event, we end up in a war with Iran, Russia is not going to be able to take as conspicuous a role in backing its allies in Tehran as it otherwise might. But I mentioned before the break that John McCain is sending Joseph Lieberman and Lindsey Graham, two very highly placed and conspicuous supporters of his campaign, to Georgia, and they're going to go to Georgia for the purpose of arranging photo ops to try to rally public outrage in this country against the Russian depredations and the attacks on civilians and all these atrocities that are going on, and to try to generate some semblance of war fever, I believe, although it'd have to be sort of a controlled contagion of war fever, if you will, because there's not really that much we can do in terms of a direct military confrontation with Russia that would not spiral out of hand in ways that the orchestrators of this conflict would not find desirable. But it's been suggested that this is sort of an in-kind contribution, if you will, to McCain's presidential candidacy, because it changes the narrative. Suddenly, we're not talking about change, we're not talking about all of these soft, fuzzy, vaporous things that Barack Obama would prefer to discuss when he talks in general terms about his numinous ability somehow to bring about the miraculous transformation of our political system. We're talking about the idea that the Russian bear has awoken from its long hibernation and has reached out its paw and swatted the heroic Georgians, leaving a trail of blood and gore in its wake. And we suddenly have to find ourselves in a confrontation, a renewed confrontation of some sort with this dreadful enemy. Given these realities, we now have to turn to the wizened, battle-hardened veteran of foreign campaigns who knows in his bones how to fight a war and win. That's sort of the narrative that's being extruded now from the McCain camp, and also from much of the media, not just Fox News, but also you're getting a very similar narrative from CNN and a lot of print publications right now. And I think that very well could end up becoming an important complicating factor in this race. I think it's interesting that Mr. Obama, who's perceived in many circles as sort of the peace candidate, and he's nothing of the sort. He's very much an internationalist. He's somebody who very much supports the use of the United States military in order to build global institutions. He's not backed away from the idea of, for instance, a highly aggressive campaign against Iran. In terms of his reaction to what's going on in Georgia, he's been just as militant as John McCain, albeit tardily so. He's somebody who's being advised to take a very stern and truculent stance toward Russia, omitting mention of the fact that it was Georgian aggression against South Ossetia that began this entire crisis, that the springboard for this catastrophe was the attack, which almost certainly was arranged with the connivance of Washington and Tel Aviv, the attack by Georgia against the ethnic Russian minority in South Ossetia. And ethnic conflicts in that part of the world are very difficult to contain. They're highly combustible. There are frozen conflicts in almost all of the former Soviet socialist republics in that part of the former Soviet Union. And it's not that they necessarily will infect each other with this type of ethnic hostility, but these are landmines that can be set off very easily, and I think that this one was tripped deliberately. When you have 1,000 American advisors conducting war games with the Georgian military up to a week before they attack South Ossetia, and when you've had a constant stream of rhetoric from the Bush administration about bringing Georgia into the NATO alliance before the end of the year, it seems pretty clear that they were... The very important corollary to this invitation was the idea that they had to have a settlement to their internal ethnic separatist problem. Abkhazia and South Ossetia are two breakaway provinces. Something had to be done to settle this ethnic question before Georgia is admitted into NATO. They want Georgia in NATO before the end of the year. This was, of course, I think, one of those typical disguised invitations to strike that you see throughout history. It's a little like, I believe it was King Henry II, when he was having having trouble with the Archbishop of Canterbury, said to a group of his soldiers, "Who will rid me of this turbulent priest?" knowing that one of them would go out and slay Archbishop Becket without being told directly to do so. I think that that's the same kind of a thing when Washington's saying to Georgia, "We want you in NATO by the end of the year, but before you're in NATO, you're going to have to take care of your ethnic separatist problem. Here, we'll train your military for a number of months. We'll provide you with all kinds of high-tech weaponry. We'll have the Israelis provide you with the right kind of training and equipment to carry out this mission. You decide what you're going to do with this." Well, it's obvious what they're going to do with this. They're going to try to use this as a way of putting down the rest of ethnic minorities and qualifying for entrance into NATO. But I think the Georgians didn't understand that what Washington really wanted was not an end to that problem, but to use that problem in order to precipitate a larger crisis for its own purposes. And you've got to be left breathless over the cynicism, the staggering cynicism of the way the people in Washington arrange these crises with almost metronomic regularity. The last time we spoke about this, Dr. Stan, I mentioned the so-called Baghdad rules. That's an expression that comes out of the 1956 uprising in Hungary against Soviet occupation, when the CIA went into that country and carefully cultivated a resistance against the Soviets and against their Hungarian quislings. And they provided the resistance with just enough encouragement and just enough money and equipment and training to mount a futile, doomed uprising against the Hungarian government and eventually, of course, the Soviet tanks that were sent in by Nikita Khrushchev. And as soon as the resistance was outed, they were abandoned. And this, in CIA parlance, became known as the Baghdad rules. You give them just enough to go out and die dramatically. The same thing happened with the Shiite resistance to Saddam Hussein and the Kurdish resistance to Saddam Hussein in 1991, then again in 1993, 1994, 1995, when they're almost completely obliterated. It's the same dynamic you're seeing right now with Georgia. The Georgians are not quite as sympathetic to me as the Hungarians were or as the resistance to Saddam Hussein was, because in this case, the Georgians are the aggressors. Their government is in the hands of somebody who's declared this what we'd have to call martial law, rule by decree. He's suspended civil liberties. He's abolished freedom of the press. He started to imprison his internal dissidents. He's been using some of the same methods of torture or quasi-torture that his masters in Washington have taught him. And it's his government that attacked this ethnic minority in South Ossetia. So they're not quite as sympathetic. But the civilians caught in this quagmire are sympathetic. I mean, the Georgian civilians, the South Ossetian civilians, the Russians who live in that live and work in that province, they're the ones who are being routed by from both directions. They're the ones, of course, whose suffering now will be exploited by the people who arrange that suffering in that typical blood-drenched charade that we've come to know so well, where they create a crisis and then they propose a solution to the crisis that always advances this plan for world order. You know, they create the poison and the antidote in the same laboratory, and it seems to work for them very well because people aren't paying attention to how frequently we are manipulated in this way.
You're absolutely right, and I think that the American people hopefully would begin studying a little history and seeing how this was used. This technique was used certainly in Hungary. It was used in Cuba, where they just launched the Bay of Pigs, and then they just forgot to tell the rest of the anti-communist underground there that the attack was coming. We just forgot, so that of course Fidel Castro would use his troops simply on that one area. Besides that, it was the only area you could have attacked in Cuba, where they were sure to lose. There was only one road off the beach there, surrounded by a thicket, and that was right past a military camp with 5,000 troops stationed there. Not only that, but of course we withheld the air power we'd promised. We withheld the supplies and resupplies we'd promised. Those men were sent in to die, just as I fear that the soldiers who are going to be fighting in Georgia are being left there to die.
Yeah, and we've got American troops who are being put right in the middle of this as well. We might have already lost American troops on the ground in Georgia, which is something that's gotten a little bit of attention. I mentioned the BBC covered that a little bit. I believe Stars and Stripes has been looking into that issue as well. And we've lost American troops in Georgia before. I mentioned that in a previous interview with you, Dr. Stan, I mentioned that 14 or 15 years ago, there was a Green Beret who was buried in Arlington with full military honors after being killed in an ethnic conflict in Georgia. And this is one of the things that caused my eyebrows to shoot up to the top of my head, because at the time I didn't realize that we had American troops, much less Green Berets, who were involved on the ground in what was then a very recent post-Soviet state of Georgia. You had Green Berets who provided the personal bodyguard for Eduard Shevardnadze, who was the first post-Soviet president of Georgia. He's a former Soviet minister, Soviet foreign minister, and a pretty reprehensible human being. That's been a pretty consistent feature of a foreign policy, too, is you find the most reprehensible people on the payroll of Washington. It was true of, you know, Saddam Hussein, for instance. And the fellow in Georgia right now, who has the advantage of speaking English and doing so with a certain colloquial flair, Mr. Mikhail Saakashvili, is a really dreadful person. But because he speaks English well and he speaks it in a way that is appealing to the ear of the typical American television listener, he's going to be looked upon as somebody different from, say, Vladimir Putin or Eduard Shevardnadze, and he comes out of the same mold. I mean, these are all people who come out of the same background in the Soviet Communist Party and the Komsomol, and people who were hardwired in to the security apparatus over there. And so, you know, the whole thing is really cynical, because they all come from the same pool, their names are all in the same Rolodex, and they do pretty much the same type of thing. And the result, of course, are these carefully controlled battles where thousands of innocent people die, and then behind the scenes, the same entrenched elite tends to prosper. One of the interesting sidelights to this, and I've not really had a chance to get through and get the specific details, but there was a report, I believe, in either The Economist or one of the other British publications talking about the way that the PR campaign before the attack on South Ossetia by Georgia was being put together, where you had the Georgian government putting out these feelers to the investment banking community here in the United States so as to help raise money to buy media to promote the interests of Georgia before the attack began. They already had the whole script worked out as to how they were going to position Georgia as this suffering little country, this sainted little group of freedom fighters who are standing up to the pitiless Russian bear. And they didn't approach the Congress of the United States. They didn't necessarily approach the president. they went right to the top. They went to the investment banking community in New York because they knew that those are the people who really pulled the strings, or at least the people who control that community are those who are pulling the strings.
William, we're out of time. God bless. We'll look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks so much. Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Now you can upgrade your existing gravity filter to remove chemicals such as triamethylenes, atrazine, benzene, chlorine, chloroform, and MTBE to below detectable limits. Black Berkey elements are so powerful, they remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and transform water, even raw, stagnant pond water, into delicious, crystal-clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon-222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are remove without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Berkey elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Berkey purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hey, Clyde.
What's up, Bonnie?
Well, I got a question about those shielded secure sleeves from Identity Stronghold.
Yeah, the sleeves that block us from stealing account numbers from the new credit cards with RFID chips. What about them?
Well, I mentioned them to our friends, and they went in for purchasing the secure sleeves.
Oh, Bonnie, if everyone starts hearing about the secure sleeve, it'll destroy our plan to steal credit card numbers at the mall with my new RFID reader.
I know, but these are friends, Clyde. They promised not to tell anyone else.
I guess you're right. That's what friends are for, I suppose. Tell them they can get a 5-pack of secure sleeves that will fit credit cards and driver's licenses for $19.95. And Identity Stronghold also has a 3-pack of secure sleeves for passport books for $14.95.
And where do they buy them?
They can buy them online or get a mail-in order form at idstronghold.com.
idstronghold.com. Okay, well, what if they don't have the internet?
They can call 1-800-610-2770. That's 800-610-2770.
Thanks, Clyde.
Well, Dr. Stan, I hope you enjoy our conversation with William Grigg. I think we're living in very uncertain times, and I'm very, very concerned about what's happening to our economy. I'm very concerned about what's happening as far as Iran is concerned. And, of course, I'm very, very concerned because most Americans don't understand that there's a small group that controls both political parties and makes mockery out of our elections. And, of course, if they not only control both, both political parties, but they rig the elections, too, with their electronic voting machines. Do you care about freedom? Because if you're not involved, you're part of the problem. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, Radio Liberty is on the front lines of this battle. As you know, we have almost 60 outlets of one sort or another, internet, shortwave. Certainly, the radio stations that we have actually a satellite you can listen to 9 hours a day, 24 hours a day, actually, with Joyce Riley and myself and Chris Meyer and certainly Butch Paul on that satellite. If you want to get the satellite, you don't have to then pay any fees. Once you get the satellite set up, it's only $169.95. Excellent information. On that, if you want to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I'm amazed how many people we have already signed up to come to our October 26th conference. It's going to be here in the North Shore of Monterey Bay. We do hope you can come. It's all day. We'll be serving lunch. You're going to have reservations. Got great speakers. We're going to have Dr. Blaylock. We're going to have Johanna Michelson, who is a medium. We're going to have Sidney, the gentleman who originally had written along with Professor Sutton, the Trilateral Conspiracy. And, of course, he's going to be with us here, Patrick Wood. Looking forward to having there. Of course, Michael Shaw will be with us. I'll be speaking. We're not going to have too many speakers. We want to be able to have each one have a lot more time, and so you can get the information that they have. And then, of course, we certainly want to remind you, of course, about Lonzevenex. If you don't know about Lonzevenex, you can go up on the Internet and look it up. But we think it's a great product. I've taken it for quite some time myself. And of course, the producer, Bill Sardi, is making a very, very special temporary offer. And if you buy five boxes of Lonzevenex at $36.95 each, you get five boxes free. And I'll tell you, that's really a pretty good financial deal. I went out and bought 40 for myself and my friends as soon as I heard about it. And of course, you simply call their telephone number. And it certainly is a 866 number, 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. Then, of course, we do hope you're going to get my talk. It's available on DVD about the Forbidden Secret and the syllabus that goes with that. My talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, which comes with the book. My talk on the secret knowledge, which, of course, is just the DVD. And then our talks on the planned police state, especially with the syllabus that goes on that. Senator William was talking about Operation Northwood. Well, we've included that in our special syllabus on Iraq, the Untold Story, which is a history of all of the contrived wars of the last century and all those people who died in those wars died for absolutely nothing, just as our boys over in Iraq, they're not allowed to win this war. The war is as phony as a $3 bill. In fact, we didn't refer to the fact that there were efforts to overthrow Saddam Hussein, yes, by his own people. Time and again, while the Iraqi people and the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and we helped Saddam, and we certainly betrayed the military officers who wanted to overthrow him. That's covered in a book called See No Evil, written by Robert Baer, who was actually a CIA agent working in Kurdistan during that time. And he tells of two specific instances he knows of where the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein in the 1990s. And guess what? They made the mistake of telling the American State Department they were betrayed. They and their families were probably tortured to death. We kept Saddam Hussein in power because everything is on a time schedule. And I fear that we're moving towards a climax of that time schedule.